Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sonic Effects. Well, if you were subject to the earlier debacle, technical debacle, it happened sometime. It is a repeat. In 11 years, this is the second time. I won't begin to describe the mayhem, but we're back on track. And rather than trying to exclude anybody, I'll simply say we have a good program today. It's well thought out. I brought in the work of Shakespeare because I felt that I've been ignoring his work because everybody knows Shakespeare, but that's not exactly the case. If there's a line, something that I sit and witness it. Yeah, let's say we're watching Hamlet. For you to bring a quote to mind is not exactly a hardship. It's like when you're talking and you're illustrating your conversation with perhaps a reference to a painting or a piece of history, that just expands my thinking tremendously, the listener's thinking. So that's what we've attempted to do here today. The interesting part is that I picked the selection today is a sonnet because I'm just fascinated by that form of poetry. And I in my brain, I know this might frighten some of the children in the room, but to my mind, the sonnet it presents a challenge. We need to infuse that format with ideas and produce a story, a telling that makes us nod and think, you're quite right, or that's valuable, something that contributes. And not everybody can do it, but as we see from Shakespeare, once you discover it, it's like you transcend the form and you're just playing with the words and ideas and thinking. I apologize here. I find a significant parallel with the craft. If you think about it, we have a form, and it's taught to us through ancient landmarks, and we all perk up like those little meerkat colonies. What in the world are we talking about with that? That's where we are never going to become an army of robots. This is never going to be a utopia. Because we're all developing our own calculus. Even to say the word, there's where I am There's very few people with that level of curiosity that are exploring the landmarks. And I, my goodness, I'm not going to fault somebody that has not been taught. Somebody that's not been taught about the knowledge that can be gained by a study of landmarks may not even give it a second thought. There's a lot of that in the craft. And it's a tipping point when we invite a scholar, somebody quite learned, to come in and present to us. We can sit back and be quite entertained. But there is a risk, I think, and tell me if I'm wrong here. The risk is that we become very passive in our learning. And that, in the hurly-burly of my week with the family responsibilities and work and all the responsibilities that are normal in life, unless I make that a priority, it's never going to be a priority. And I'm always going to be, I could think of it, and I've done this, I've described passive learning as a bit of a problem because it seems to stifle the creativity of the individual. Other than that, I'm not about to suggest that we're all cast offshore or left on a desert island and now figure it out. I'm not saying that. There's so much information around us, markers, if you're looking for that, that take us toward a broader sense of what masonry can offer and how it makes those things, how they make those offerings to us. Yes, a lot of that, a tremendous amount of that depends on the intellect of the individual, but let's not ignore the context. I'll give you an example here from my own life. Once upon a time, I'm just captivated by the social sciences. Yes, all of that stuff that we're told is completely unproductive because it doesn't have a dollar sign associated with it. Well, when I look around, many of the brilliant ideas I see deployed didn't have dollar signs associated with it. You can't buy smart. You can't hire somebody to eat your dinner. No. You do the work yourself. So, but I was, because of my charming personality, I was hired as a lab technician in an environmental biology lab. Now, even the term alone, these are the projects that were going on by this group of scientists was international, but I'm no fool, but I had to be taught how to do specific tasks in the lab. And once you do that, then I know how to use a telescope and I knew how to handle specimens and I could do that reliably. And that's the part that was needed. I didn't need to absorb all of the background in taxonomy and whatever. But of course, being around scientists, if you're like me, I ask questions. And what do? They teach. They teach continuously. And once they know that you are curious about their work, it's not like this distraction of you're a learner and I'm not. We were all learning because the research, the work itself was discovery. It was such an enriched couple of years. I still have a lot of that information that's tucked away somewhere, different terms that just flood into my thinking, and sometimes I chuckle to myself that I was part of that group, and I'm proud of it. I was quite pleased to be part of that, but it was also sort of an acknowledgement that you know, I didn't have that drive to commit to that field of science. I had a drive in a different field, but there was connection. There was significant connection to the likes of me, And so in a way, I stumble around in masonry. No disclaimer, you know, it didn't come, like, unlike you guys, my experience did not come with the disclaimer that this is easier said than done. And the environment that I was in was not warm and welcoming. It was superficial and pretentious and quite hostile, aggressive, let me put it that way. What was surprising was that I didn't see the connection. I came in expecting that the older, more senior members would be the wisest. And you can imagine when I found that they had little interest and weren't a source. They could tell me what they saw happening for the past, for their time as a Mason, but no one was at all the slightest concerned about why things were happening. You walk into a lodge with so much esoteric material hanging on the walls and in the formats, the symbols, not any concern about why. In fact, that was considered bad form to ask. So even the simplest readings, the readings were, there was nothing wrong with them, but I was handed, Hiram's Key and, that series of material. I absolutely wonderful, but I strongly recommend that you read other things first. You get into Coyle's work or Mackay's. You get into some of the Harry Carr's, big, really love his work, Wilmshurst. And today, I would say that we need to look at Churton's work. I just like that kind of clarity. And take a look at some of the research and material coming out of Scotland. Yeah, in the world of that's in some ways becoming quite unstable. It is what it is. Always has been. And this is a well-grounded place, and it's influential. And so is, I think, the ideas that are coming out about our craft. The connections are there for us to discover. It's not a doctrinaire. It's not a set of rules. The landmarks are not a set of rules that we ought to follow. And if we don't, then we're somehow in violation. How if we learn them, how we learn them, and what we take from them speaks volumes about the setup of masonry and Masonic lodges. These are places, these are beautiful classrooms. And to add to the tone, not to frighten anybody. This is not the evangelicals telling us we're going to burst into flames. No, none of that. But as atmosphere, we create these spiritual environments to enhance our thinking. Now, do people, if the public walks into our lodge, they experience none of this. So we have to, in a way, educate ourselves, learn some chops, and demonstrate our interests. Often that happens without mentoring, which is very, very rough, but it happens. We see this hundreds of years of history and the rich state of philosophies, not just, we can become fascinated like I am with the Greeks and trying to cipher out. I'm still trying to cipher out, understand Spinoza and Kant and Nietzsche and Aristotle and Plato and I can see that once you read a bit about that, you can see a lot of those ideas embedded in emulation ritual. Certainly is this going to become a wildfire? No. Never has. We treat these ideas with some delicacy, and if you're always right to criticize, always right. There's so much wrong with this kind of thinking. There's so much freedom about this kind of thinking that it is. If we're caught up in a superficial world, then we'll be burdened by the superficial criticisms, the indifference. That doesn't matter, so why ought to? It's not putting money in my pocket or food on the table, so why? Well, if you can't quite figure that out from the first instance, then I still don't know how to bring that to your attention. I'm not that clever. The thread, if you will, is with you and you, what you learn and pass on. And yes, it's very thin, and rightfully so. Who am I to tell you that you're the continuity of Masonry? Who the hell am I? How dare I? It's as if I'm thinking that from the early, if we just include the early extant records from what are the Scottish using now? Grand Lodge of Scotland, 1598 minutes. That's not to say that's the beginning. It's when they started to write things down to today, that the ideas, this body of work, has been passed on by a very small group of people on the face of the earth to a very small group of people on the face of the earth. And does one mind absorb it all? I don't think it's designed that way. It's perspectives. And plenty of metaphor there. Plenty of metaphor. Is there one ideal form of art that all galleries need to be measured against? Well, you know, the story of the Impressionists sort of put that one to rest. Masonry is the same. It's as soon as you and I begin to try and define it, we find that we're censoring. There's so much more. And yet, if you were to ask, is there structure? Well, yeah, there is. And there's form? Yes, there is. We know that. Describe it? Well, that's what we're trying to do here. Now, if it's been a hectic start to a program, but I think you'll see that we've tried to weave these ideas together again in a meaningful and entertaining kind of a way. So I'm starting back with music from 1959. This is Ben Webster in the Wee Small Hours of the Morning. It's what we do. It's what we did. Music. Thank you. Oh dear. So it's not about whether we have imagination, it's how we apply it. Yeah. And my goodness, where are my manners? I'd like to welcome some new listeners, and just all of you. Thank you for supporting the program, from listeners from China, Oman, New Zealand, Brazil, Zambia, United Kingdom, thank you, South Sudan, Ethiopia, Pakistan, Iran, Ireland, Latvia, the United States, and Canada. I've stopped asking why people from different countries tune in the show. I'm just thinking it's because it's interesting, and it exchanges some value. But I am gobsmacked. This is, yeah. Thank you, each and every one of you. And thank you for telling your mates and sharing it where you can. That's just brilliant. Whew. Discover diversity. More connections. If we thought about it, and this is a conversation starter with you, and by the way, it's your round. I keep a tally. If we thought about it, we might say this is the goal of education in general and higher education in particular, discovery. Whether we are bent over a shop table or standing in mock court, that's for the law students in the crowd, people are attempting to prove themselves in some way, bettering their condition. It's not a guarantee, though. We might notice privilege does become a lifestyle to some. It's not what draws people striving for a better way to step into the fracas. It's a simpler connection, I think. If I apply myself, I might as well aim high and see what comes. Maybe it's fear of failure, maybe pride, maybe through your childhood, you were victimized. That is seriously valid. Maybe it is an unstoppable genius. Whatever the source, whatever it takes, has been our consistent call to arms, something inside of you. And in some way, this adage applies nicely to our chosen field of study. Learning enough that we can extend benefit to family and community and nation. Any wonder people roll their eyes? We are a community of sorts. For all our faults and flaws, we try imperfectly, but we try. And out of the numbers who crowd our doors, there is always a handful who are a grade above. Equal but different. Not through ambition, but for talent. Since the 16th century and possibly before, men have wanted reliable guidance. How better than to teach a man the tools needed to calculate an ethical path forward? I'm hard-pressed to think this is voluntary. It's necessary that we preserve the kind of knowledge that intimidates oligarch and despot alike. That may be the only level of accountability beyond manipulation. So is there a rightness in that? Is there a point or a purpose? Absolutely. But make that choice for yourself. For yourself. So might it be. Thank you. Why does John Coltrane work in the morning? Why? Ready? William Shakespeare. William Shakespeare, interesting guy. Born 1564 and died in 1616. I'll leave that to you. The history in surrounding that period of time is quite impactful on the guy. And we know that this writer became quite renowned during his lifetime, unlike some other authors. And he was one of eight kids. His dad worked as a glove maker. That was an important craft in the time. And he also was involved in civics, in the local running of things. And he would think that he sent his kids, including William, to a local grammar school. And from there, we know about his marriage to Anne Hathaway when she was, he was 18, she was 26. They had their first daughter, Susanna, and then Hamnet, the twins, Hamnet and Judith. But Hamnet died when he was just 11. So the girls lived on. Went to London, yeah, and that's where he established himself. So this was the guy that was publishing, you know, he published his first poem. Remember, think, if you were a great writer today, what do the great writers and poets do? How do they survive? They write, and they write to an audience and expect that we're going to find value in what they're talking to us about. One of his first long poems, Venus and Adonis, and then the Rape of Lucretia. He did Venus and Adonis in 1593, made his name. He became a founding member of something called the Lord Chamberlain's Men, and it was a company of actors. It reminds me of Chelsea Lodge in London, that lodge that is of people who are performers in the arts. And company, and he was the company's regular dramatist, and he produced an average of 2 plays a year for almost 20 years. But we'll, why go off on a tangent? 28 plays, 2 narrative poems, 154 sonnets, and a variety of other poetry. So the richness accessible to you? It's one thing to be, you know, clouding your thinking and living in your own head about the world around you. And it's a whole other thing to see the play, to see human condition, not perfect, but the human condition and emotion performed for us. And to be the observer of something that otherwise seems so intimate. The poem that I'm working on, the 128th here today, is one of the few sonnets that created a physical scene. And although that scene involved only the poet standing beside so-called blessed wood, probably a harpsichord, the dark lady, the subject, is playing it. And this one is compared to Sonnet 8, with a concern about music, Sonnet 128 is more sensual, but he's jealous of his mistress touching the instrument rather than him, and the poet fantasizes about kissing the woman in the same tender, controlling manner that she uses when she's playing, to kiss the tender inward of the woman's hand, and resents that dancing chips. This was, we have found out, written for and about his mistress, men of the day. Not much different than men of today. See what you discover and what he's saying about this woman. How oft when thou my music placed upon that blessed wood whose motion sounds with thy sweet fingers when thou gently swayest. The wiry concord that mine ear confounds, do I envy those jacks that nimble leap to kiss the tenor inward of thy hand, whilst my poor lips, which should that harvest reap, at the wood's boldness by the blushing stand, to be so tickled that they would change their state. And situation with those dancing chips, o'er whom my fingers walk with gentle gait, making dead wood more blessed than living lips. Since saucy jacks so happy are in this, give them thy fingers, thy lips to kiss. he's jealous of the harpsichord she's playing because is he in love? You think?
Thank you.